talking about political parties, and we're looking at how they play, for better or worse, a vital role in our political system. And so first, what is a political party? Well, a political party represents a particular group of voters who form an association with common interest, and this allows that group of voters to influence or control decision making within government by electing candidates that represent those broad interests to public office. So that's essentially what a party means. Now, historically, the United States has had a two-party system, with the exception of the years from 1776 until 1800. So during that time, we were single party. There have been a few times where we could be technically multi-party. There was a party known as the Whigs that rose to prominence, actually elected a few presidents, and so we weren't always just two-party, but historically that's been the general story. Okay, so what is a two-party system? Well, a two-party system is a system of government in which you have two parties. Each are competing for power. So the federal system was designed that no one person has all of the power. But now the concern in a two-party system is that currently one party has all of the power, except for the courts. Now, Washington, of course, warned us against the danger of a two-party system. He said it could lead to division, it could even cause civil war. Now, the two-party system emerged from two of our founding fathers, two brilliant minds, both concerned about the future of our country. However, both had strongly different viewpoints on how this country should be organized. For example, Thomas Jefferson supported a limited government. If you look at the preamble of the Constitution, the six purposes of government that Jefferson just strongly agreed with, none of them mention a national bank. None of them mention acquiring new territory through purchase or treaty. None of them even mention public roads, public schools, public libraries, public utilities. None of that. Jefferson believed that a government should be only a police and a military. That a government should make laws, it should enforce laws, and it should interpret laws. And otherwise, people should be free to live their lives. That was Jefferson's view on government. He was an anti-federalist. He only agreed to the Constitution because the Bill of Rights were included. Meanwhile, Alexander Hamilton believed that the Constitution could only be protected through a strong national government. After all, he said the Articles of Confederation were a terrible failure that resulted in the near collapse of our country, and a strong national government would be necessary for the survival of our country. So meanwhile, the two could not come to an agreement. They were cordial with one another, they were professional in their interactions, but they disagreed fundamentally with how our country should operate. And in fact, that led to the birth of the two-party system. Thomas Jefferson left the Federalist Party and formed the Democratic Republican Party, and then ran for president against the second president, John Adams. Meanwhile, the Democratic Republican Party, as it was formed by Thomas Jefferson, eventually split up in the election of 1828. In fact, they disagreed over issues of the formation of the National Bank. They disagreed about many of the policies of President Andrew Jackson. And many of the disgruntled Democratic Republicans left because of those two things and formed their own political party called the Whig Party. In fact, within just a few short years, they would run a Whig candidate, William Henry Harrison, and they would win. In that election, there were three parties represented. There was the Democratic Party, represented by Martin Van Buren. There was the Whig Party. Harrison, who won, was an extremely popular figure. And then there was the Federalist Party. Also, the modern day Republican Party was formed in 1854. It was made up of a bunch of different political parties. There was also third parties even in the 1850s. There was the American Party, nicknamed the Know-Nothings. There was the Free Soil Party. There was the Abolition Party. And of course, the Whig Party. The modern day Republican Party was formed by a man named Horace Greeley. But the first Republican candidate ran in 1856. It was the famous General John C. Fremont. He lost to James Buchanan, but the Republicans would win their first presidential election in 1860. The only thing that united the people that became the Republican Party at that time was an opposition to slavery. They disagreed about the details, they disagreed about why slavery should end, but they all agreed that slavery should end. That's what the Republican Party was founded on. That's what it represented, and that's all the South cared about when Lincoln won, because that, in fact, that's when the South seceded. And so we've already talked about whether or not we think that the United States should have a two-party system, so hopefully you have enough to form some type of educated opinion. But now let's talk about third parties, because that is also certainly a thing. Third parties, and let me define that for us, are parties that challenge the two major parties, are certainly groups that you may identify with and you may even want to get involved with. But what are they? Well, number one is the Populist Party. This is probably the most famous of these. The Populist Party once represented a large group of the nation's poor and downtrodden. Their most famous election was in 1898. The Democratic Party even endorsed the candidate William Jennings Bryan, who was running on the populist platform. His goals included the direct election of senators, which even though they lost this election, that would later become the 17th Amendment. The 8-hour workday, which again, even though they lost this election, would later become federal law. And even better working conditions, and a number of other complex economic issues. And they are the most famous of the third parties, because even though they were always considered a fringe third party, all of their goals eventually came true. And so even though they never won a presidential election, their goals were achieved. Next, there's the Progressive Party. The Progressive Party was formed by Teddy Roosevelt. So it is precedent in this country for a president to serve two terms and then retire. Teddy Roosevelt served his two terms. He nominated his successor, William Howard Taft, who won election, but Roosevelt was very upset with the legacy that Taft had left. And so he came back, he tried to run again, he formed the Progressive Party. And they also had a number of ideas that, though the Progressive Party never won a presidential election, they all came true. For example, the direct primary. The direct primary means that in 2016, when the Republicans were trying to decide on a candidate and when the Democrats were trying to decide on a candidate, it was up to the people of those particular states to vote on that candidate. It wasn't always that way. Once upon a time, you wouldn't know who any of these people are until the presidential election, because they would be chosen from within the party leadership. So again, even though they didn't win a presidential election, the Progressive Party has had an influence on the way our country works. Secondly, the initiative. The initiative is a fancy word for a petition. If you want to change a rule and your lawmakers going through the proper channels are doing nothing about it, well, that's when you go over their heads. How do you go over the lawmakers' heads? By the people. You have to get a lot of signatures to make it work. You know, more signatures depending on the scale of the project. But that allows the ordinary person to change the rules. And then finally, the referendum. If your initiative is successful, it could result in a referendum being added to the next election ballot. For example, alcohol was legalized in Henderson County and the outside of the city limits because of a referendum. People voted and said, sure, whatever. Referendums have resulted in all manner of significant changes in each state. Some parties are formed and organized based on single issues. Some of these promote a particular social, economic, or moral issue. For example, the Prohibitionist Party. The Prohibitionist Party formed just to outlaw alcohol. That's all they were there for. That's all they could agree on. And that was a big enough deal to these folks to form a political party about it. And of course, it later became the 18th Amendment, known as the Volstead Act. Usually these types of parties don't last that long because they either achieve their goal or they do not. In the case of the Prohibitionist Party, they achieved their goal, yay, and then they essentially dissolved. There are some parties that form around ideas. These are called ideological parties. They may support a specific set of beliefs or doctrines. For example, there is an American Socialist Labor Party. There is an American Communist Party. And on the opposite extreme, there is a Libertarian Party. These are all parties that run candidates that you can follow and you can keep up with, and they will participate in all of our presidential elections. None of these parties have ever won a presidential election. However, they still remain influential, just like the other ones that we've talked about. Now, third parties often form around independent candidates, meaning that they are often started by a charismatic leader who unites a group of people around a particular cause or idea. The main obstacle to these folks' success is awareness. You all know who ran on the Democratic platform in 2016. I mean, really. You all know who ran on the Republican ticket in 2016. I mean, obviously. Do any of you know who ran for the American Socialist Party? Do any of you know any of the third party candidates from the last election? Okay. Yeah, Jill Stein ran for the American Democratic Socialist Party, and then who else?
Gary Johnson
ran for the American Libertarian Party. Did anybody else know that? No, it's okay. I know it because, well, I obsessively followed the election, but not many people knew. And yet they were running. They were other options you could have voted for. You didn't have to vote just Tweedledee or Tweedledum. There's always other options. However, the two-party tradition means that the two big parties had more money. So you didn't hear a lot about Jill Stein, even though she's brilliant. Gary Johnson, even though he's an extremely accomplished individual. Well, because they didn't have nearly as much money in their war chest as the two big parties did. Now, countries work. I always like to ask this question because sometimes other countries are just better at things than we are. Let's be honest. So how do these other countries work? Well, some have a multi-party system. That means that there are more than two viable parties. So that's the trick. That's the real kicker. Is a vote for Gary Johnson in a backhanded way, in many people's perspective, a vote for Gary Johnson was a vote for Hillary Clinton. In many people's perspective, a vote for Jill Stein was a vote for Donald Trump. Why? Because that's one liberal vote that didn't go to the Democrats. That's one conservative vote that didn't go to the Republicans. And that's why a lot of people don't vote third party. So when I say viable, I mean three actual options with legitimate chances of winning. Gary Johnson never expected to win the office of the President of the United States. He made a name for himself, sure. You can look up about his accomplishments. He has a website, and I'm sure he'll run again next time, or someone will in his stead. Jill Stein, once again, is an amazing and brilliant woman, and she didn't stand a chance, though. She knew she didn't. I mean, these third parties aren't often expecting to win elections, but they're raising awareness for issues that are relevant to the American people. But there are a few countries that have functioning multi-party governments. And I'm not saying that these people have it all figured out. No, they have their problems too. You see, in a multi-party system, there's often never a clear majority. That means a president could win with 30% of the popular vote. And that's kind of scary. This individual who's supposed to represent all Americans only received one out of three votes. But also, even in the functioning part of the government, it can create an even harder time to get things done. I mean, oh my gosh, if you follow politics, Republicans and Democrats disagree fundamentally on all manner of issues, and it does hinder with the actual functioning of our democracy. Can you imagine if there were three groups that never agreed on anything? It would be even harder to get laws passed. So there is a headache that a multi-party system can create too. You see, a multi-party system can even be politically unstable. If there are so many different competing interests, it can be difficult to have a multi-partisan coalition. It's difficult enough to have bipartisan agreement on issues. But multi-partisan, that's even tougher, especially when some of these parties represent some rather extreme ideas. And then finally, Washington's favorite, the one-party system. And I'm not going to tell you this is the best idea either. In fact, I don't know the answer. Well, the trick is that the party and the government are essentially the same. So whoever controls that party, elections are a moot point. You can still have a democratic single-party system, or whoever is running for the head of that party would have to submit to a general election. But if that party has no rivals, then it is assumed that party will remain in power. When Washington ran for his second term, there were no other parties running against him. And so the Federalist essentially controlled the government until the election of 1800. Which is another reason it was so significant when Thomas Jefferson took power. And so third parties do play an important role. They don't always win elections. In fact, they rarely do. Okay. I mean, it depends on how you define a third party. So, like, the Whigs, William Henry Harrison won. Fun fact, he died 2 months after he won. So, he won, though. He was a Whig candidate. And not many others. And I don't even know if you would really call the Whigs a third party. They eventually absorbed into the Republican Party. There have been a few fun cases where third-party candidates won a significant amount of the popular vote. Eugene Debs ran 4 times as an American Socialist. He once got 10% of the popular vote while he was in jail. He was in jail for protesting the draft. He said, "I fundamentally disagree with a policy that forces people to go fight for a war they don't believe in." And they threw him in jail for it. He said, "You know what, Nananaboo-boo, I'm going to run for president." And he got 10% of the popular vote while he was there.
How can you run for
president from India? Was that, like, legal? He did. Go figure. He's a hero to some. In fact, in Bernie Sanders' office, there's a giant painting of Eugene Debs. So there you go. Okay, so how are these parties different? Well, number one, obviously, in our two-party system, you have Republicans, you have Democrats. And they largely differ on the way that government should be involved in the lives of Americans. Democrats tend to believe in more government regulation. I'm going to try to keep this simple. Democrats are generally your big government people. Meaning that, well, the government provided the road out here that got you to school. The government provided the school that we're sitting in right now. Are generally going to favor more government policies. Meanwhile, there are mainstream positions. You see, one thing about the two-party system is they have to appeal to a diverse and divided group of people. Just because you're a Democrat doesn't mean you're going to agree with all of the Democrats on things. Just because you're a Republican doesn't mean you're always going to agree with what the Republicans are up to. But nonetheless, each of these parties has a platform, and you can go to their website and you can read about what they believe in. And a platform is a series of statements that express the party's principles, their beliefs, and their positions on various issues. You know, it's very simple. If you want to Google Republican platform, here's what they believe on different things. You know, it may be even helpful before these representatives come and speak to you to Google their platform. What do they believe on certain things? And honestly, they're going to fall in line with what the Republican Party believes on most things. There's another word you need to understand. It's called plank. And that's not the painful version of a push-up. A plank is each individual's part of a political party's platform. So what is their platform on the plank of abortion? What is their platform on the plank of immigration? Their platform on the plank of the size of the military, etc. And so, in summary, planks and platforms help us understand who we would like to vote for, because once these people have to publish those things, so it shouldn't be a secret of who they're running for. Looking at political parties, we are discussing a two-party system, and today's two parties are Democrats and Republicans, obviously. But did you know they're also organized into state political parties? And there is a local Henderson County political party. And they all collaborate and organize to promote voting, to raise awareness about political issues, and of course, to work for their party's interest. And so the two parties are organized at the local level. Again, there's a Henderson County Democratic Party, a Henderson County Republican Party. At the state level, there's North Carolina versions of both. And then, of course, at the national level. Now, the National Committee, I wanted to define this for you guys. The National Committee contains representatives from the 50 state party organizations who run a political party. And so the National Committee, for example, the Democratic National Committee has a chair. That means someone who organizes all of the events. And they also have a head of that particular political party. If that party has a sitting president, for example, the head of the Republican Party currently is Donald Trump. The National Committee is made up of representatives from every single state, and one of their primary purposes is to raise funds. Well over $1 billion was spent in the last election, and that was paid for through campaign contributions. It's also the job of that party's National Committee to organize their national convention. And so at the National Convention, every 4 years, that party selects who is going to be their candidate for president. But they're also deeply involved in selecting who are going to be particular political candidates in small, local, and state elections as well. Again, they're run by a chairperson. Now, each party recruits candidates. You know, they may seek you out, you may seek them out. They also create advertisements. Those are the campaign commercials that you see or the ads you see on social media. And these national conventions, once more, are held once every 4 years. And at these conventions, delegates nominate candidates for the president and vice president. Now, as you know, the primary process can take 6 months to a year, where these different hopefuls will compete for votes to see who is going to be the next candidate in a presidential election. Now, each party also has delegates. Some states use a popular vote to determine who is going to be that state's nominee for the political candidate. North Carolina does that. However, the state of Iowa has a caucus. A caucus is a meeting of different political party members, representatives of that party from all over the state. And they meet there and they conduct party business. At these meetings, they write down the party platform, which, if you remember, a platform is just the stated values and beliefs of that party. Now, also, once the person running, once the candidate is chosen, there's a campaign committee. In fact, at the congressional level. And they are involved with helping to elect party members. They help to raise money. And the focus, once more, is to not just elect a president, but to elect members of their party into state and local offices. And this committee also, or excuse me, this party also works to elect candidates for national office. But once more, there's a Henderson County Democratic Party. There's a Republican Party of Henderson County. You can research and find out, and I hope that I Side With quiz was helpful, but you can research and find out candidates, political party affiliation at the state, national, and local level. Next, a precinct. A precinct is a geographic area that contains a specific number of voters. We are part of a voting precinct. We are in the same precinct as Transylvania County, and if memory serves, part of Buncombe County. And that precinct is drawn by the Republican Party, because they are currently in power in the state of North Carolina. So once more, it's a geographic area containing a specific number of voters. We are the only ones who would vote to decide whether or not Representative Cody Henson gets to keep his job. Only people in our precinct vote either for or against that person. In fact, the same with Congressman Meadows. Congressman Mark Meadows represents our precinct at the national level. Now, you guys have a different polling place than I do. My polling place is near my home in Transylvania County. You guys might go to one in Edneyville. You might go to one in Crab Creek. You might go, it just depends on where you're living. But these precincts are run by precinct captains. For example, when I go vote in November, I'll go to the Little River Town Hall. It's a tiny little place off Crab Creek Road where I go to vote. And whoever is running that particular voting center would be a precinct captain. Now, several of these precincts together make up a ward. And this is an important term to understand. A ward is several neighboring precincts that make up a larger unit. So for example, we might be connected with the other Western Carolina precincts because we often vote in a similar fashion. And so those would make up a ward. Again, a larger the precinct is the smallest political unit in our country in terms of elections. Ward is the next. Now, each county, Henderson County included, is going to have a committee. Within a state, counties are the largest political unit aside from the state organization. So your most local is going to be your precinct, that is Little River or Edneyville or whatever little town or municipality that you live in. And then you've got Henderson County, the larger government, and then of course the state. There's a county chairperson in Henderson County that is an elected official. And so they have to run, they have to get your votes. We need to meet this person, so we'll try to get them in here sometime. Now, the local political organizations are what we call the grassroots. You know, it's at the local level where many big ideas are started. And so these precinct and ward leaders build up the party here. You know, it would be very difficult for us to get the President of the United States to come in. It would be very easy, however, to get our county commissioner. We can probably contact them, set up a meeting, and they'll be here next week. And so that's why it's called the grassroots level. You are going to be very connected with that person. And that is the person that you can go to get things done here and to get bigger movements started. We also need to understand what political machines are. A political machine is a strong party organization. These are the individuals or groups that can control appointments, that is, political appointments at the local or the state level, and they can also deliver votes. You know, for example, the political machine in the past served an important purpose. There was a man named Roger Tamney who once ran the city of New York as if it were a corporation. He was the boss of New York because he ran the political machines in the city and they controlled millions of voters, meaning those millions of voters owed them their loyalty and would vote however they told, and he was able to use that to stay in power for over 20 years. We consider that harmful today because Roger Tamney won multiple elections, but he did so through committing fraud. And when he was finally found out, he fled the country. So I got ahead of myself. The most famous example of corruption through political machines was Roger Tamney, known as Boss Tweed. Roger Tamney controlled everything. You know, and I always used to wonder, how did he get the loyalty of so many people? Like, why were these people voting however he told? Well, he would give them things. You know, say you're an immigrant off the boat. You've just arrived at Ellis Island. Well, someone, a representative from his political machine, is going to show up and say, I've got a place for you to stay. We've got a job for you. And we're going to get you on the road to citizenship. But we're also going to get you voting. And we're going to expect that you vote the way we want you to. And if you say no, well, then those opportunities go away. Or if they find out you voted differently than what you were supposed to, those opportunities go away. You're back on the street. And you do that with a large enough group of people, and you've just bought their votes. Now, the political party of Henderson County, when you become a voter, is going to reach out to you at some point. And it's going to call you. And if you're unregistered, meaning you haven't registered as a Democrat or a Republican, if you're a registered independent, that party is going to try to court your loyalty. They're going to call you and personally explain why you should vote according to their party. Now, let's say you are a registered Republican or a registered Democrat. You're still going to get a call from the members of that respective party. And they're just going to want to know, hey, we want to make sure that you're voting. And I've even had them send us like somewhat intimidating letters saying, we know if you vote or not. Because by the way, whether you vote or not is public record. It's not public record who you voted for, but we can find out if you voted. And that's kind of creepy. I've had them literally send me letters and say, we noticed you didn't vote in this tiny little election recently. You better show up at the next one. But next, political parties nominate candidates to run for public office, obviously. The way this is done is through a direct primary. A direct primary is an election in which voters choose candidates to represent each party in a general election. So in 2016, the primary in the Democratic Party was between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. There were others, but it came down to the two of them. The Republican Party was a little more complicated, right? Their primary was between Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Jeb Bush, Donald Trump, and many others that I've already forgotten about. And Republicans, that is in the state of North Carolina, our direct primary rules are that you must be a registered Republican to vote in the Republican primary, or you must be a registered Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary. And then you choose, you vote to choose who you want to run in this election. North Carolina uses a closed primary system, meaning that you have to be registered in that party to vote in that primary. So if you're a registered independent, you don't get to vote in the primaries. Not all states use closed primaries, but ours does. The other states use what are called open primaries, meaning you don't have to be registered for that to vote in that party's primary. So once more, closed primary means that you have to be registered to that party, and you have to declare that a certain amount of time before the primary. And to be fair, there are arguments for and against either system. You know, the advantage of a closed primary is you don't want someone who is leaning Republican to vote in a Democratic primary, because they're going to vote for somebody random just to throw the results. But of course, the downside of a closed primary is it doesn't allow for people who might have changed their minds, because yes, people do change their minds and may want to become politically active and vote in that primary. However, because of the closed primary rules, they don't get to. Now, how do you win a primary? There's a couple of ways. Number one, through a simple plurality. A plurality means the most votes among all those running for political office. So whoever gets the most votes wins. Perhaps that is the simplest method. There's also a majority of votes. This is a little more complicated. A primary operating with a majority means that a candidate must receive more than 50%. And then finally, the winner becomes the party's candidate in the general election. Next, so we're going to have an election, a presidential election. It's a big deal. It's all over the news and social media. You can't get away from it, obviously, think of 2016. But did you know, and we talked about this yesterday, there were also unaffiliated candidates. There are third-party candidates. And weren't there some random ones? Didn't Snoop Dogg run, or These Nuts ran, if you remember that? Like some really silly things. Yeah. There was a cat or something that they ran as a joke. There's just always silly things. And all you have to get your name on the ballot is a petition. A petition is a formal request for governmental action. These candidates can get on the ballot for the general election in most states simply by getting enough signatures. So yeah, it's a legitimate question. Are closed primaries fair? Should we use open primaries? And I think there's fair arguments on either side. So what else does the party do aside from nominating candidates? Political parties perform many functions and give you a connection to your local, state, and federal government. For example, political parties obviously spend much of their resources and time campaigning for candidates. And the election is ongoing, and these folks that are coming to talk to us are all over their precincts and states campaigning. And so you're going to hear a lot about them. You can follow them on social media, and you can kind of see where they are from day to day. Political parties also keep citizens informed. You know, you can go to your local Henderson County political party, and you can find out what local issues concern voters of this particular party. It's their job to keep us informed on these issues. And then finally, they carry out the people's message. You know, one of the most important functions that your local political parties serve is to hear what you have to say. That's, after all, why these people are coming to visit our class, because they have the responsibility to hear what you say. Because regardless of party affiliation, Mark Meadows represents you. Whether you agree or disagree with him at all, he is supposed to represent you. Regardless of political affiliation, Tom Tillis is supposed to represent you. Because after all, they are the functioning part of our government. Mark Meadows has to cast votes on laws that affect our federal government. And also, they are the watchdog. If you see something bad happening in your community, well, the first step is go to the police. But if the police say there is no law about that yet, well, then you need to get that law changed. You know, maybe, for example, hope I'm not stepping on toes here, but there was a home not far from where we live that kept dogs chained up all day, every day. Personally, that bothers me. Their dogs were just always forever chained up. And I don't know, it just kind of hurt my feelings. I was like, why? You know, I guess I get it, but there's now a policy in Transylvania County that you can't do that. We didn't make that policy, but someone did. They saw those dogs and they saw they're being neglected, and you know, they just, and granted, it wasn't just them being chained up with a comfy place, but they were like chained up and exposed to the weather. They weren't being protected. They weren't being cared for. And there was a lot of problems going on with that particular case. And now they're not there anymore because a law was passed at the local level that now you just can't do that. And then finally, our local political party is connected with the state and the nation, and they're the first place to go to. If you see something like that and there is not an existing law, they're the folks to go to get that changed.